I've been working on perfecting what would be the least pleasant thing to listen to a human eat on a podcast. And I think I am close.
Least pleasant. So you're
saying
the
least pleasant.
The most horrific.
You'd have to hit all of the sonic like notes. Like you want a little bit of crunch in there, but then a lot of slop. Like if we can audibly hear something falling out of your mouth.
Let me give you guys what I got. Here's where I'm at.
Oh, that's an apple. Or a pear.
How do you eat? Do you tilt your head back and then gobble?
Here's the thing. It's apple slices dipped in yogurt that has granola in it.
There we go.
Oh, my God. So much texture.
Ding, 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 ding.
Perfect blend. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I've pretty much got it in the bag.
My name is Chris Plant, and I'm here to win.
My name is Russ Frostick, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Russ Frostick, and I spiked our audio.
Was he changing gears? Like an automobile?
No, more like a very small bike.
My name...
This is the besties. Where we pit the newest, latest, greatest tiles of the week against each other in Mortal Kombat. See which one reigns supreme. We then pit it against our current reigning champion to find out if we have a new game of the year. Chris Plant, what is our current reigning champion?
Oh, I always forget
it's
it.
FTL. We decided.
Oh, yeah, that
game's
hot. I'm not used to it not being my game.
Yeah, it's the game, FTL.
That game's good.
That game is hot. I came back from Japan, and I spent like 14 hours on the flight, and about half of that time was spent playing FTL.
Time just flies by.
How far have you gotten?
I've gotten to the final boss.
Okay. Wait, on what difficulty level?
Easy.
Oh, don't even play it.
No,
why?
I think easy is a lot more.
It's a good way to learn the game.
Ugh.
It's a good way to learn the mechanics.
Yeah, for a child.
Have you gotten to the final boss on normal?
No, I've made it 3/4 of the way through on normal.
Well, but you have no idea what the final boss is like.
Yeah, because I'm taking my time. I'm enjoying the game.
I'm enjoying the game. Anyway, the final boss is brutal if you haven't gotten there yet. They throw like 50 drones at you and like mega lasers.
Do people board you?
People board you.
Oh, I've gotten so much better at people boarding.
Yeah, you just go into the med station.
If someone gets on my ship, I just turn the computer off.
No, just go into the med station. If you fight them in the med station, it's easy.
I pick the entire staff and just go in there and we'll pass all together.
My jam is to dump all the oxygen out of the ship.
That doesn't work. I tried that a lot, and all that does is make the ship a danger zone.
The secret is you have to close all the doors, so they have to spend the time opening them.
Yeah, you got to upgrade the doors.
Yeah, if you upgrade the doors and you can... So it takes them longer to get through upgraded doors so you can starve them out with oxygen that way.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, I tell you, I got to the final boss and I got beat and I was so, like, disheartened that I haven't been able to play the game since. That was like a week.
What?
I just can't... It was so, like... Here's a pro tip. The final boss has phases, so don't waste all your missiles in the first phase.
Yeah.
That's something you should know, because that's how I screwed myself.
But frankly, I made it to the final boss a second time, and I still just got annihilated on the second phase. The second phase is just brutal.
Yeah. So. Anyway, FTL's great. Listen to last week's episode if you want to know more about that. Griffin, have you been playing it?
Yeah, I played it a little bit. It's very, very difficult.
It is. Try easy. It's a better way to learn.
I wish they had a baby easy mode.
Yeah,
for,
super, super easy for babies.
It's called YouTube. You just watch it.
Chris Plant, ladies and gentlemen. Russ Frostick, you're the commissioner this week. Who do you want to go first?
Let us go with Senor Griffin McElroy.
Beautiful. All right. My game this week, I've been waiting so long to talk about it, is Little Big Planet for the PlayStation Vita.
Oh, man.
Yay.
You've been playing that for, like, months.
Has anyone here played it?
I have.
Yeah. It is exceptional. It is absolutely fantastic. I would be hard-pressed, other than maybe the Walking Dead games, to think of a game that I have just fallen in love with as much as this one. It is, because it's not just like a good game for the Vita and an important like game for the Vita at this point in its life cycle. It is probably the best console to handheld port in the history of video games. Like,
well, it's not a port.
I mean,
don't confuse the issue.
You're right. I know what you're saying. I didn't say adaptation.
Okay, it's fine.
Not an adaptation either. People need to know it's a different game.
Like, it is a different game. It's not Little Big Planet 2 Vita time. Like, it's right. It is a different. I misspoke. It is the best like transition of a franchise from console to handheld, because acceptable. Whenever you think of that sort of transition, you like the very first question that comes to mind is like, well, okay, what did they have to cut out? And in this case, the answer is literally nothing.
They added
it looks sharp as hell. It has the same like super charming art style as Little Big Planet. All of the level creation tools are here, and there's also like a ton of new ones, including like touchscreen and tilt and rear touchpad support. It uses all of the Vita's many inputs very well. It's very efficient. It doesn't waste any part of the Buffalo. Like, you can use the microphone to record voiceovers for your characters in the game. You can use the camera to take pictures that you can then use for stickers to add decorations to your levels or other levels if you want to grief people. It feels really nice. Like, the conceptually, it is perfect for a handheld audience because none of the levels are super long. The story levels are a little bit longer than the community-made levels because they know how to use the... There's, like, a thermometer that caps how much stuff you can put in each level. But the community levels, they take you, like, 5 minutes to beat. It's almost like a WarioWare-esque mindset for platforming because you just, like, keep going through these little bite-sized levels. And, like, even though the game has... Well, the game's officially been out for, like, 2 days now, but GameStop broke the street date on it. There's already, like, a ton of amazing stuff on there. Like, every day I turn it on, and there's new stuff waiting for me. But, yeah, it's just...
I can't believe it's only been out for 2 days. I've been playing that game for...
They did send it very early. So I do want to bring up one thing. I'm a very big fan of the Vita as hardware, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of game software makers... have been smart about the hardware insofar as not demanding that you utilize every part of the Buffalo, as you said.
Yeah.
Honestly, I sort of think that things like backtouch are awful and should be abolished from the planet.
Mm.
And I find that in Little Big Planet Vita, at least for the campaign, I haven't messed too much with the community levels yet. They force you to use a lot of the features that drive me up a wall. Like, I was really enjoying, like, just the normal platforming stuff. And, like, mm-hmm. a little bit of the front touch is totally fine. But, like, every other level, it's like, now you're rolling things by tilting the screen and stuff like that. And that kind of bummed me out.
I still feel like the story mode is mostly just the same platforming stuff. I don't know. I feel like they work specifically rear touchpad. I think, really, the only thing they use that for is to push things forward towards the screen. Because it still has the same three-layer... platforming style that the other Little Big Planet games have. That's really the only thing that they use that for, and I don't think that's ham-fisted at all. Also, I think some of the front screen stuff I feel like is really inspired. Like, you get a helmet that shoots rockets, and then you can steer the rockets with the touchscreen, which is really neat. Like, some of the boss fights that they work that into are really very clever.
I was just left thinking, like, you could have just done that with the analog stick or given people the option.
What was the name of that black and white game that came out right at launch that everybody was so excited about?
Black and white?
Escape Plan. A third of Escape Plan was doing that silly touch the back of the Vita to push out the block mm-hmm. scenario, and it was atrocious. And it made me think, this whole back of the pad thing just doesn't even work. Like, you can't even program it well because these guys had to do three things and they couldn't do that one. And I was shocked with Little Big Planet. While, like Russ, I don't technically enjoy it, that it at least worked. Like, when I needed to make my way across a level on the first try, I could do it. Like, it registered appropriately. And the same was with the user levels. We're like, I was more impressed technically that they appear to have gotten it right. Where if you want to do it, it's not a total pain. It's, like, fine. and not necessarily enjoyable.
It lets you do cool stuff both in the create mode, like the rear touchpad. It is used to move the camera around, which in other Little Big Planet games, like if you are placing a block, if you're like shaping something, you have no control over the camera. It's just sort of centered on what you're making, which is kind of annoying. In this game, you can look or, like move around with the camera, look at what you're... like, look at the other stuff surrounding what you're creating while you're creating it. Like, it's a really helpful tool. And it also leads to some cool gameplay stuff. Like, did you guys play the level that I made?
No.
Yes. the shooting the people who control things?
You shoot clones of yourself out of your head, and then you control yourself with the basic controls, but you also move them around using the touch screen.
Really?
And so there are these parts of the mm-hmm. level that, like, you have to... control yourself to open up gates for the other person to move around to manipulate stuff in your environment and stuff like that. Like one player co-op, like that's not possible without the extra control
mechanisms. And you created that?
Yeah,
there was only like one real problem with that level, in that it didn't have enough Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
if I'm gonna play a Multiplicity game, I want
you Michael know Keaton I took a picture it. Of his face and put it in the level, but I got a cease and desist
from Michael Keaton.
But no, that's like
excuse me.
There are people who are making really genuinely cool shit like that, like every day. It really is like the best selling point for the Vita's like crazy, otherwise extraneous features. And, like, I think it is probably the first killer app for the Vita in that regard.
Yeah.
So that's their community is so nice, I'm going to play this game, forever. I can't see myself ever stop. Because Little Big Planet 2, I played that for, like, a year and a half.
That was your Gotye, right?
Huh?
That was your Gotye?
Yeah, that was my game of the year when it came out. And this one, like, the same things I loved about Little Big Planet 2, like being able to come back to it and have basically 20 games worth of levels waiting for me, like to have that in a portable thing, like I am never going to get on a plane without it.
Yeah, so you can download like a ton of levels and you don't need a net connection
So Little Big Planet PSP, that was the only thing you could do, which was kind of annoying, but now you can either stream the levels like you do with basic Little Big Planet, or you can download them and then just have them for later, which is a really neat feature.
Is it disc-based, or can I get it through the PSN?
You can PSN. Either. I have it on PSN because it seems like I'm always going
You'll
to
always
have
it
nearby. Yeah. So.
And you can take pictures of your junk and put it all over your level if you want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
you can make a level.
Yeah. Lovely. I think next up is Mr. Plant. What do you got, Mr. Plant?
I got a little ditty called Torchlight 2, which is the sequel to Torchlight 1, which is not a sequel to Diablo 2.
It's not a sequel.
It's inspired by Diablo 2, which is a lot of names of games that I hope you get the reference to, so this will make a lot of sense. It's an action RPG. You play it from the top down. You build up a character who's a hero, and you go from dungeon to dungeon, clicking, clicking, clicking lots of things, and collecting the loot. Those things drop after they perish. There's a bad guy at the end. And it is super, super addictive. It's like the comparison that I can make to capture the essence of playing this game is the joy of opening a letter from a loved one that has come from some far-off country, mixed with cracking open a beer can, and popping bubble wrap all at the same time.
I don't have that many hands.
It's just what it's like it just feels texturally, it feels good, and the sound that like is like perfect every time you click, and then you just keep getting little gifts.
I am I'm a recovering alcoholic and also bubble wrap addict.
Bubble wrap.
And he has no family.
Yes, and my family has never written me a letter.
That was my favorite episode of The West Wing, when Leo has to deal with his bubble wrap addiction.
You never just want to pop one.
I don't understand people who can just pop one bubble.
The sound of the
it's here the sound of the pop. Finger That's what
rubbing
I remember.
Against the plastic.
Russ is dying.
I'm sorry, I just watched that episode and it's really funny.
It's really hitting you. It's really hitting you in the spot.
Directed right at me, right at my heart.
Luckily, I watched that episode like 6 times, so.
Last night.
Much like every episode of The West Wing.
I do. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Plant.
That's. I mean, it's a very simple game to describe. What I liked about it is usually these games are set in very dark settings, like just gritty dungeons with lots of black and dark browns and maybe a little bit of red. And they're not places I want to hang out. I'm also not really into high fantasy, like dragons and oaks and ogres. And
what is an oak? Like a tree?
Oak trees and fir trees. And what I appreciate about this game is it's like very charming, and they do other types of fantasy. Like an entire act of the game is set in the desert, and which is not particularly wild, but they choose to kind of go about it in different ways. So there's a lot of references to Arabian Nights, just to like turn of the century Egyptian excavation. They go to different source material other than kind of the typical fiction fantasy rack that you find at your bookstore. Another example is the third act is the most traditional, you know, murky swamp and, you know, dank forest. And rather than going to Tolkien, they go to Hans Christian Andersen stories and kind of like 1920s pulp writing, which is, I think, just it's a richer source. I don't play that usually. Like, there's lots of color. Get it, you can read.
Jesus
Christ. No, no. I'm just saying there's lots of color and there's lots of bright lights and there's lots of interesting things to see other than, like, green ore.
Inspiration of torture. You're just clicking shit and then you stop eventually.
Yeah, but you're clicking, like, the meaning of, like, life, right?
How do you feel about Trojan Women?
Yeah, Russ is mad at me because I thought the Trojan Women was a play that everyone had to read in school. And apparently, y'all are idiots.
Yeah, every day of Chris Plant's life is just to prove that he went to college.
Was no.
That, was that Mammoth?
It's like I went to high school. Yes, Mammoth. He wrote it during the 300 BC era of Mammoth.
Was that Euripides?
Euripides. Oh.
There's not a way to say his name that doesn't make you sound like a dipshit.
Mammoth or Euripides?
Euripides.
Euripides. Yeah, do you have any questions about the game?
Yeah, so a lot of people didn't like Diablo 3 for a number of reasons. Did you play Diablo 3 at all?
Yeah, I did with you, remember?
No. I don't think we've ever played Diablo 3 together.
Are you kidding? We played it at the airport.
Oh, like right. The beta. You never played the final one.
Yes.
Why do you think... Because so a lot of people are obviously making comparisons because...
Here's my defense of Torchlight over Diablo 3 as someone who did not play Diablo 3 beyond the beta. Okay. So take it with a pretty big grain of salt. You can, one, choose any difficulty you want at the start. So you can pick a very hard difficulty right off. Two, it's only $20, which I think is a valid argument. Three, lots and lots of color, which... I think that's like that goes a long way. If I'm going to spend that much time in a world, I want it to be a place that I'd like to be.
I have a question about Torchlight 2.
Go on.
I played Torchlight 1, and my biggest complaint that I had with it was that I found, and maybe this is like was like just me, and I'm about to be really embarrassed, but no. I found it structurally pretty hard to understand, like,
okay,
get a hang
if you're talking about
it.
The story, you don't no. go into it for that, but if you're
no,
talking
I don't
about
mean
just
the story, I mean, like,
going to that same spot over and over again, going deeper and deeper into the
yeah,
mind.
I found it yeah. kind of hard to understand, I guess, or keep track of.
I totally understand. Oh, this will be good for Griffin. So they changed it up. Now it's three acts, really kind of like three and a half, because it's a video game, so it doesn't know when to end. But you start in different kind of hubs. Now there's not just one hub. There's multiple hubs. And these hubs will have specific areas. So you're kind of like, it's more like a road trip where, oh, you've killed everything in the forest. Oh, where will you go kill next? How about the desert? And then you go there and it's like, you've killed the entire desert. To the mines! And once you've like extinguished
the world. There's
still
something living. Organic yeah. material still exists in the mines.
But the best part is the way you know you've killed everything is at the very end you fight a boss, and then the boss perishes, and then a giant Pokemon appears, and the Pokemon talks to you, and he's like, "Ah, oh, I am the Pokemon of Ember World, and you have saved me."
It seems like a big spoiler.
What? It's not, because it happens so early, and they're everywhere. These, like, goofy-ass Pokemon for no reason are in this world.
Do you catch them?
No, you don't catch them because they're majestic.
Why are you saying they're Pokemon?
Because they're untrainable Pokemon. You cannot husband these animals.
There's no such thing as untrainable Pokemon.
Yeah, you know what an untrainable Pokemon is? Pokemon is just an animal.
What about Mewtwo? That cat had sass.
You can train
except
Mewtwo.
You can fucking catch and train him, dolt.
He uses Psybeam.
I think he agrees to be with you. It's more like an agreeable partner.
Dad, if I put that to my master ball, he is mine.
It's indentured servitude, which is very different than capturing someone.
There's no such thing as an untrainable Pokemon. There's only an undisciplined master.
Exactly.
Oh,
awesome. I have a confession to make. I don't think I like this type of game. And it doesn't make sense to me because RPGs are like my jam. They're like my favorite genre of video game.
You feel like you're wasting time when you're playing it? Is that the problem?
It is so... There is nothing compelling to me about clicking on stuff to get more loot, which I know is a total double standard because that's kind of what a lot of RPGs are. What is dumbfounding to me, I played a few hours of Diablo 3. I played probably 8 hours, I would say.
Okay.
And the whole time I was just waiting to fall in love, and it never happened. And from what I've played of Torchlight, like, the same thing happened. Diablo 2, the same thing happened. I played a Torchlight 2 demo at an event that was the most, like, mind-numbing. It was embarrassing. I, like, was going up against a final boss just, like, clicking on it for 15 minutes. And, appointment ran over. And I was like, I have to go. Like, I can't beat this. I'm sorry. I have to leave to go to my next thing.
I can't believe they demo it like that. But here's the thing about Torchlight 2. That I felt differently about this than any of these games. Especially Torchlight 1, which I did not particularly like on console when I played it. In Torchlight 2, there were actual tactics, and they were, like, very specific to your class. So I played a rogue, basically, who specialized in the dark magic. I could raise creatures from the dead. And I found that, one, you have, like, 8 or 9 different enemy types that'll show up at one time. So you can have these Goliaths and these, like, tiny, small little creatures that'll, like, get through any barricades and trudgers and all these other things. And I would use basically like one power, like a bramblewood, that would put a thorny, poisonous vine behind me. So I could basically create corridors that these creatures would have to walk in by using this power. And then at the front of that, I would set up a flank of 6 skeletons that would fire arrows into that. And then I would send a bouncing explosive typhoon down the corridor, which would, it goes through as many enemies as it can get in a certain amount of feet. So I found I was actually using the resources available to me to create tactics, which I've never done in those games. Like, towards the end, I wasn't clicking so much as I was, like, using my hotkeys to cast very specific spells to kind of manage the battlefield.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you could still beat it with just clicking mindlessly, but it was, like, it was surprisingly enjoyable to find ways where I could manipulate the surroundings to kind of, like, just destroy people with, you know, 3 or 4 really well-placed moves.
I think maybe my big hang-up comes with how sort of fast everything, like how you're not just killing like 1 or 2 monsters at a time. I think the focus on like tearing through huge mobs of people, like that has just never really appealed to me, which again, like, it's hard for me to smack talk Diablo and be a World of Warcraft fan, but at the same time I feel like that, like, the tactics are much more. Like, you're basically
one target at a time. And
one target at a time, everybody working together, like, a lot of, like, threat coming off that target, a lot of, like, meticulous planning and teamwork. Like, I kind of like, I guess maybe I just like a slower game where, like, when I kill something, I'm like, yeah, we did it. And instead of, like, well, one down, 4,000 to
go. You want a slower, more panda-oriented game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always had a problem with these sorts of games because at every level, pretty much every video game is you know, click or push this button until you get the reward. But that game, this type of game seems to be like the most obvious. You can see through the systems the quickest, I think, to where you realize, like, or at least for me, like, it doesn't take me long at all to realize. I never get into its spell. Like, I just always feel like I'm, just doing this to keep doing it, you know? And it's not yeah. actually.
I mean, that's why I haven't played Diablo, just because I didn't want to put a lot of time into something that is a lot of cooking. But I mean, that'll be the question I guess I have to ask myself is, did I enjoy this because I played it for review and, you know, I knew I was going to finish it? Or is this something I would have committed all that time to if I had just picked it up? And I still think it's the latter. I still think I would have played through it just because it's like, maybe it's just a game made for me with all the douchey references I made, but just amazing. Like, it's amazing that there are all these settings in this game, and even the side quests are totally different. Like, you'll be in the middle of a bright field, and there'll be a lamp, and you'll just decide to light it, and out of nowhere, a ghost ship will appear, and you'll get on this ghost ship, and suddenly you'll be in a totally different world.
No, that sounds lovely, and I would say, I think for someone, you know, I think we've all been in a situation where we're reviewing a game and getting to the end is just torturous. So the fact that you reviewed it and got to the end and we're still having a good time
is, and still I'm going back to play it again.
Yeah, and are still playing it. That's a good sign for that. Cool. Let's take a little break. What's been going on?
How you doing,
guys?
I want
to hear about your trip.
I went to Japan.
What's like the craziest thing
about Japan?
Like, what's the craziest thing that happened?
Did you see any of the racist record shops?
No, but I saw some really awful. So, Mike McWhorter of Polygon has been there many times, and so he sort of guided me around, you know, Akihabara and Harajuku and sort of all the big haunts of Tokyo. And he did, I think just to see the horror in my face, take me into probably the most horrific manga store I've, like, I can't even fathom. My brain is scarred.
What was so horrific about it?
I
wasn't
even
manga,
it
was hentai.
Yeah, no, it was manga.
Hentai
can be both.
Yeah, that'd be like saying, like, I went into a movie shop and you're like, it was horrible, and it was like, was there pornography?
It was like a
there
comic.
Yeah, it was just a porn shop.
Yeah, it was, but it was only comic porn.
Yeah,
like, hand drawn.
That's what hit, well, sure.
Anyway, it was horrible. But Japan on the whole, like, amazing food. Like, you can go into any, like, crappy, it looks like a greasy spoon, like, hole in the wall, and you'll just get, like, amazing, like, noodles and beef bowls and spectacular
beef bowls.
The trains are very crowded. That rumor is true. I had a very intimate experience with a total stranger, just because, you know, it was not my choice, but she happened to be, like, all up in my stees because there was absolutely nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. So she just, and it was, you know.
Was it like Lost in Translation, this encounter?
I did whisper something to her at the end of the train ride, but I won't tell you what it was.
Was it like, hey, you're standing on my balls?
Yes.
Something like that.
Something similar to that. and then, so Tokyo was very cool, and I hung out with, you know, friends of the show, Cheapy D, and the 8-4 guys, who were very, very cool. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, we Tokyo Game Show started in earnest. And Tokyo Game Show is a very weird show, especially these days, because there's really not a whole lot of games there that, like, people outside of Japan would give two shits about. So it makes covering it really tricky and finding, like, games that sort of have a more global appeal to them.
Where are all your cosplay picks?
I didn't see too many cosplayers.
What?
Surprisingly.
Did you not go to the courtyard?
I didn't go to the courtyard.
You're Whoops. Fired.
Yeah, that's creep town.
I do want to mention again.
How am I supposed to churn my butter if you're not delivering me the cosplay picks?
Oh my word.
I need four Yunas on my desk by the morning, and two Rikus.
Hey, wouldn't it be... Okay, here's a free game. You ready?
Okay.
Pokemon Snap meets cosplay.
That has to already exist in
it seems
the
like it
hentai
be the
game
best.
Market. Yeah.
It has to, right? It has
Where
to be
it's like, you're on the subway, and people are beneath you.
Well that's speaking great. Of, I was in...
You're talking about upskirt picks?
Yeah, that's... Those
so
games
actually,
are
just, cool here?
Justin is talking about going around a game convention with a camera and throwing throwing apples at people in costume.
Oh. Hey! Well, this is important, actually. So apparently in Japan, there's like a whole polite, like system.
Where you throw an apple at a girl?
Well, sort of with regards to taking pictures of cosplayers. So apparently, you can't take a picture from the side. If you do, they'll yell at you and cross their arms in front of you, in front of them, so you don't take a picture of them. It has to be very precise. So you have to wait in line and like stand in front of them and make sure they're looking right at your camera. Otherwise, you'll just get like annihilated by, I don't know, some character I don't recognize. But
Ranma.
Half. So yeah, there's a lot of like a cultural drama that you need to worry about. I also saw a no upskirting sign in the subway. So
I'm glad that that's necessary.
Sign. They're trying to take the bull by the horns and really take care of the situation with signs. How is that such
a huge cultural phenomenon?
What, taking upskirt pictures?
Subways are all over the place. Why in Japan do they have to worry that much about men taking pictures of ladies' boobies?
Because for many, many years, they were a sexually repressed culture. And so now that their wings are starting to spread, sometimes their excitement comes out in different ways. I've also got an NYU talk going on about this and a TED talk scheduled later this month. So definitely tune in.
Oh man, I feel like I've learned so much about the Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm basically Boutros Ghali over here.
Can we shut this down? Oh, I guess we have another game.
We have one more
game. Oh man, from Mr.
I gotta talk about it.
Justin McElroy, solving mysteries.
I'm not gonna win.
What's your game? It stinks, right?
No, it doesn't stink.
What's your game?
It's the Testament of Sherlock Holmes. Testament of Sherlock Holmes is a game. And in it, you are Sherlock Holmes, but sometimes John Watson, but sometimes their dog.
Wait, are you really the dog?
Yes.
Wait, is this the game that you spoke of briefly during E3?
Yeah.
Oh, it finally came out.
E3 a year and a half ago, yes. So the Testament of Sherlock Holmes, the mystery... It's kind of hard to explain without ruining anything, but there's a
it's bishop. Moriarty.
I'm getting ahead of me, Junior. The bishop is murdered, and Sherlock is on the case, and he acts really weird, and you don't know why. You find out later, and so I played. I found out about Sherlock during an E3 appointment for this game in E3 2011. So I thought, God, they've been making all these Sherlock Holmes games. I'm going to go back and check out the last one they did. So I played Sherlock versus Jack the Ripper. That game was really cool. It is a very well-constructed story just because it has to be to follow the events of Jack the Ripper. So much of it is laid out for them, and it has some actual cool twists in it, and it's also really good for like just sort of that sort of virtual tourism thing. They really capture like the spirit of what you might imagine it to be like in Victorian England in that period. You go to like, you know, you spend most of your time in Whitechapel and things like that.
Was it Moriarty?
No, it was Jack the Ripper. That game was pretty good, and I was excited about Testament. It is just not... So the basic flow of the game is you're going from location to location, and you're doing very little actual deduction. You know, what you're usually doing is solving weird puzzles. Like, everyone in London in this time period apparently had esoteric puzzles guarding their...
They were all the Riddler.
Yeah, right. Everyone in England was the Riddler.
No, it's like Professor Layton.
Except all the puzzles are, very few of the puzzles are like, require actual brain power.
They're more mischievous.
They're more like, once you realize it, it's like those slide puzzles. Don't you hate those? Like,
they're
locked in one corner and you know what has to happen. It's just a question of like, oh, I guess I just got to fiddle with this thing until I get it. That's the kind of puzzles we're talking about. And again, they were better in the last game. You do some deduction where, like, you find a bunch of clues and you have to tie those clues together and make some conclusions about them. But the conclusions are always so crazy that it's hard to follow their logic. So you don't really feel like Sherlock Holmes, you just feel like a guy that got lucky. Some of the acting is good. The dialogue is okay.
Is it FMV acting?
No. No, it's all...
F that.
Well, they're actually... It's funny that you mentioned that, because this week also saw the release of Sherlock... the Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective on the iPad, which were FMV games originally on the Sega CD, and they've revamped the video. And I played those actually right after Sherlock Holmes, Testament of Sherlock Holmes.
Did you kickstart this?
No. No,
okay.
Because it didn't get funded. the Testament of Sherlock Holmes... In Consulting Detective, you are... actually going to location to location, you're interviewing people, you're listening to their story, you're looking for incompatibilities with things you've heard before, and trying to actually deduce the answer to the puzzle that's set before you, the mystery. And there's so little of that, and it's so in Testament, and such a shame that this this, you know, whatever 15, 20 year old Sega CD game is a better representation of, you know, that feeling of being Sherlock, but it totally is. So it's hard for me to recommend Testament of Sherlock Holmes to any but the hardest core of Sherlock fans or fans of the series. But it's inoffensive. It's just a lot of missed opportunities.
They lie in that marketing campaign, or they bend the truth as far as you can bend without breaking.
How so?
Because the advertising makes it sound like it's an open world Victorian.
It's open world in the sense that you can go, you can choose one of like four locations.
Like when I'm watching that trailer, I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, this is like GTA in Victorian England.
So it's more
this
like Carmen Sandiego.
Awesome.
That it is actually not that far off.
I want to hear more about Sherlock's dog.
Okay, so Sherlock's dog is named Toby, and in one level,
wait, isn't your cat named Toby?
No, my cat used to be named Toby until it turned out that he was a girl. So now my cat's named Amelia.
Is the dog ever like, oh, I smell a clue?
No, but that's not like, he doesn't say that, but he sees
Toby
a picture of a
spit out that bone. That's evidence. I'm sorry.
When he sees the murderer, do his ears flop up straight on edge?
It really is like,
oh, where'd this poor woman's head go?
You follow stink lines.
Like, stink lines?
For 15 minutes.
Sherlock, something's carved into this woman's stomach.
Eventually get to a doorknob, and it's actually awesome because you start the level as Toby, you run around, you jump over a pile of boxes, and you climb up this thing, and you flip a switch with your snout, and then you run over here, and then you do this thing, and then it ends up with Toby scratching at a doorknob for Sherlock to come open it and investigate. And the doorknob is, like, literally 5 feet from Sherlock. Like, he was looking at it the whole time. I don't know what the dog did. But Sherlock does some really messed up things. He, at one point, I'm not making this up, at one point he feeds an opium addict ashes mixed with dirty water to make him puke.
Like, yeah, well, that's good, because he was going to die from the opium, right?
No. He just needed a distraction so he could steal the keys in his opium den.
What a dick.
Yeah, he's a real jerk. At one point, there's this woman who's a secretary in a prison, and she is pregnant with one of the guard's children, and they're terrified that her dad will find out, because he might fire the guy and beat her mercilessly for getting pregnant. And for no reason that I can discern, Sherlock fully tells the dude that she's pregnant and who the father is.
Like, did you select that option though?
No. He just did it. I wouldn't have selected that option.
He's a detective. He's got to share secrets.
He's got. He has a compulsion.
He's promoting his personal brand.
All right, so that's Sherlock. I don't know. Go ahead, Russ.
Sounds like it's gonna win.
Yeah,
but maybe. It's not, because Torchlight's going to win.
No, yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Torchlight wins.
That's horse apples. You didn't even give us a chance to argue it.
Give us a chance to argue it.
Okay,
not
fine.
Me.
Justin.
No, because obviously you're going to be very receptive to what we have
with
to say.
With me, I would rather I would rather I would rather throw my considerable weight behind Little Big Planet.
You're not allowed to.
Yeah. Brothers, if you're the brothers.
No, I just better than clicking 2.0. Now click in color and no, with veiled references to Hans Christian
Andersen.
You have
to defend your game, Justin.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sorry. The two people who say they don't like the genre don't like Torchlight. What a surprise.
Okay, fine. So Justin votes for his own game, the dog game with Sherlock. And Griffin, you describe how awesome your game is with Backtouch.
Is that the is it really the only reason you don't care
for it?
You have to touch the back of the console.
I played a lot of it, and I found it basically to be the same as Little Big Planet 1 and 2, but with Backtouch.
I'm willing to make a compromise here. I'm going to broker a deal.
It doesn't matter because is law.
This is for Griffin's vote.
Okay.
I think I would vote for Little Big Planet if we can agree FTL is the better game.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. What?
Wait, what?
You guys can vote for whatever the f*** you want. It's going to be me making the decision. So
yeah, I was just helping you get this
with your
week.
Documentary.
Oh, no. I don't. I'm not going to. I mean, I'm Democracy not going to compromise like that. It's a much better game than FTL is.
You are a maniac.
Russ, you're the commissioner. This is your...
Yeah. I know. I'm ending this
Okay.
Torchlight wins. Little Big Planet, if you played the first two and don't like Backtouch, you should probably not play
this. You are a fucking imbecile.
Wow.
No, I will say I didn't hate Little Big Planet Vita, and I think especially if you haven't played the other ones, this is a good one to get because it doesn't really require playing the other ones, and it's fun. It's like a fun... And there aren't a ton of games on Vita. But
sorry it doesn't reference more classic literature that nobody's ever heard of.
That is not why Russ voted for my game.
My favorite level in Torchlight is the one where you wake up as a bug.
Okay. So congratulations, Torchlight 2.
There are flying cockroaches in the game that throw spears.
They have humanity issues?
Oh, not really. You're not really sure if they're a bug or they're just an old man who's no relevant in his family. It's the German. Okay.
Good times. Are there witches and stuff like that? Or
yeah.
How deep are we going?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Torchlight, congratulations. Does anyone think that FTL is not as good as Torchlight?
I don't know. This is certainly an interesting trial. That's another Kafka joke. Okay, no, we're gonna finish this off. Griffin, what do you think? Is Torchlight better than FTL?
I think FTL is a much better game than Torchlight. Yeah.
Okay, anyone else agree with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's obviously better.
I also agree. So yeah, FTL continues its reign. Congratulations, FTL.
Thank you to everybody for listening to our podcast. If you would, take a moment to subscribe on iTunes and write us a review. There, I've never checked, but hopefully we have some. You can.
Oh,
read
I'm looking
the stuff
now. Half a star overall score.
No, we have many positive reviews. Thank you for the people who have done it. We don't want to besmirch their effort.
We are also write things about video games at theverge.com/gaming.
Gaming.
And
not
we're gonna have our then, own website like in a week or two or three or four or five or six, and that's polygon.com.
Hey, they should find us on youtube.com/polygon and watch the documentary series, too.
Yeah, we got a documentary series about how dope we are.
Dope!
And everything else is great, so just listen next week, and shouldn't the world's best friends be the world's best games?
Woo!